Okay, so picture this. You
Yeah.
walk into a payday lender, right? You need a little cash to hold you over until your next paycheck.
Right. Sounds familiar.
But here's the thing. The rules around these loans are
Another's.
surprisingly complicated.
Very much so.
And that's what we're diving into today. We're looking at the payday lending rule. And get this, we've got info from both
Oh,
sides,
wow.
the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB,
Right.
and a presentation given to lenders. So
Interesting.
we're really getting the full picture.
Yeah, and one of the first things that might surprise you is how many different types of loans are actually covered under this rule?
Really, I figured it was just your
Not the
classic.
2-week payday loan.
No, it goes beyond that.
Huh, tell me more.
So imagine this for a second. You take out a loan, right?
Right.
It seems like manageable payments spread out over a few months,
Mm-hmm.
but then, bam, that final payment.
What?
It's way bigger than all the others.
Oh, no.
That's what's called a longer-term balloon payment loan.
And that falls under the payday lending rule.
Wow, that balloon payment thing sounds like it could really catch someone off guard.
Yeah.
It's like a ticking time bomb on your bank account.
That's a great way to put it. And that's actually a big part of why this rule even exists.
Okay.
It's all about protecting borrowers from those risky lending practices.
Makes sense.
Now, another category that's covered is just straight up longer-term loans.
Okay.
These are the ones with those crazy high interest rates,
Like, what are we talking?
exceeding 36% APR.
Ouch.
Yeah, and to make it even more complicated,
Oh, no.
these loans
Yeah.
often come with something called a leveraged payment mechanism.
What even is that?
So basically, it means the lender can automatically take payments from your account.
Really? They can just take money without.
Well, you agreed to the terms in the loan agreement.
Oh, okay.
But it's important to note that not every single loan falls under this rule.
Right, the exclusions.
Exactly.
So what are we talking about there? What kind of loans?
Let's say you're financing a new fridge.
Okay.
That'd likely be considered a purchase money loan.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be subject to the payday lending rule.
Gotcha.
Same goes for real estate loans.
Right. Real estate
And
loan.
then you've got alternative loans from credit unions,
Interesting.
which are designed to be a little bit more consumer friendly.
Yeah. It makes sense that they wouldn't want to
Right.
discourage those options.
Exactly. The CFPB.
Yeah.
Remember them. They're walking kind of a tightrope here,
Great.
trying to rein in the riskiest lending practices without making it too hard to get credit entirely.
Right. So we don't want to like completely cut people off.
It's a balance.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So we've got a handle on what loans we're talking about here.
Yes.
But let's get into like how this rule actually works in practice.
Okay, so one of the most significant changes has to do with payment limitations.
Oh, okay.
Imagine this. A lender can only attempt to withdraw a payment from your account twice.
Twice. That doesn't sound like a lot of chances to get it right.
It's a big change.
Wow.
And it's a big deal for lenders, especially those who relied on those repeated withdrawal attempts in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Our lender presentation really emphasized what a big shift this is for the industry.
Oh, I bet. That must make collecting payments interesting to say the least.
Yeah, to say the least, after those two failed attempts, the lender has to get your explicit permission to try again.
Huh. So no more just like endlessly trying to take money from your account.
Exactly.
That's good to know. But I do have to ask, what counts as a failed attempt?
That's a great question.
Is it just like if there's not enough money in the account?
It covers situations where there aren't sufficient funds,
Oh, okay.
but it also includes instances where the payment is rejected for other reasons.
Okay.
So let's say your bank flags the transaction as suspicious. That would also count as a failed attempt.
Interesting. It's like they're trying to think of all the ways a
Exactly.
payment could go
They're
wrong.
trying to cover all their bases.
Yeah, and make sure the borrower's protected.
Exactly. And to make sure borrowers are in the loop, the rule also mandates specific notices that lenders need to send out.
Okay, so it's not just about limiting the attempts,
Right.
it's about communication too.
Exactly. Communication is key.
Yes, parenting.
Transparency is key.
Okay, so let's talk about these notices. What are we looking at here?
All right, so there are three main ones.
Yeah, okay.
You've got the first payment withdrawal notice,
Yeah.
the unusual withdrawal notice, and the consumer rights notice.
Gotcha.
Each one plays a specific role in keeping borrowers informed.
Okay, let's break those down then, starting with that first payment withdrawal notice.
Okay.
What's the deal with that one?
So before the lender can even attempt to take that very first payment,
Okay.
they need to give you a heads up.
Okay.
And the timing of that heads up depends on how they're sending it.
Like snail mail versus email, that kind of thing.
Exactly. The Bureau.
Quiet.
Remember them. They're the ones who crafted this rule.
Yeah.
They give lenders the longest lead time for snail mail.
Yeah. Okay.
6 business days.
6 business days for snail mail.
Electronic delivery.
Yeah.
Like email needs to be at least 3 business days before the payment date.
So less time if it's digital.
Right.
Makes sense. But what about this unusual withdrawal notice? When does that one come into play?
So let's say your regular payment is usually deducted on the 15th of the month.
Okay.
But this time you need to switch it to the 20th.
Uh-huh.
Maybe your paycheck is coming a little later than usual.
Okay.
That change, even though it seems small,
yeah,
triggers the unusual withdrawal notice.
So they have to notify me even if I want to pay a few days later than usual.
That's right. The rule is designed to cover any changes.
Wow.
The amount, the date, even the method of payment.
Okay.
It's all about transparency.
I see. So it's just like every step of the way, they got to...
Every step of the way.
Keep the borrower informed.
Keep them in the loop.
Now, what happens if those 2 payment attempts have already failed? That's where the consumer rights notice comes in, right?
Exactly. This notice is crucial because it reminds you, the borrower...
Okay.
...that the lender can't just keep trying to take money from your account.
Right.
They need your permission to try again.
It's like a legal shield for your bank account.
That's a great way to put it.
Knowing about these notices could save someone a lot of stress and potential overdraft fees.
Absolutely.
But it still doesn't magically, like, solve the issue,
right,
of having to repay the loan.
You're hitting on a critical point.
Right.
While these rules protect borrowers,
yeah,
they also present challenges for lenders.
Right. Okay.
So imagine this. You're a lender.
Okay.
And you've hit that 2-attempt limit.
Uh-huh.
The borrower wants to make good on the loan.
Oh, okay.
But those standard payment methods are out the window.
Right, because they've already tried twice.
Exactly. That's where the single immediate payment transfer, or SIPT, comes into play.
SIPT, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Remind me what that is again.
Think of it as a one-time payment.
Okay.
Either electronic or by check.
Okay.
That bypasses those payment limitations we just discussed.
So even after 2 failed attempts?
Yes.
The lender can request a SIPT?
Not quite a request.
Okay.
The key here is that the SIPT is initiated by the borrower.
Okay.
It's a way for you to make a payment, even though the standard withdrawal process is on hold.
Gotcha.
Because of those 2 failed attempts.
So it's like hitting the reset button?
Not exactly. Yeah. Here's the catch.
Okay.
Even a successful SIPT doesn't erase those previous failed attempts.
Huh.
It's a one-time solution, not a complete reset.
Ah, so the clock is still ticking, so to speak.
Exactly.
That's really important to understand. This SIPT loophole isn't a free pass for lenders to just keep trying to collect indefinitely.
It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card.
It sounds like the CFPB has really tried to think of everything.
They really have.
They've even created model forms for all of these notices, haven't they?
They have, and that's where things get a little murky.
Oh, how so?
As our lender presentation points out,
While
these model forms are intended to simplify things...
Right.
They don't always reflect the nuances of real-world lending.
What do you mean? Can you give me an example?
Sure. Imagine trying to specify a payment date on a form.
Okay.
When that date hinges on other factors.
Yeah.
Like when the borrower receives their income.
Right.
The model form might not have a clear way to capture that level of detail.
So the model forms, while well-intentioned,
right,
can sometimes be...
Yeah.
More confusing than helpful.
Exactly. And the lender presentation even highlights concerns about the application of these rules to card payments.
Interesting.
So the rules treat payments made by debit cards or prepaid cards.
Okay.
The same way as checks or electronic transfers.
And that's a problem.
Well, the presentation argues that it's an inconsistency because card payments don't typically have the same risk of overdraft fees as those other payment methods.
Interesting.
Some lenders might see this as a loophole, a way to bypass certain aspects of the rule when it comes to card payments.
But wouldn't that be risky?
It could be. If the CFPB decides to clarify its stance on that interpretation,
right.
This is a classic example of how new regulations can have those unintended consequences or lead to differing interpretations.
It definitely highlights how important it is to stay informed about these rules.
Absolutely.
Both for borrowers and lenders.
For everyone involved.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power, especially in the world of finance.
That's for sure.
Let's say your regular payment is usually deducted on the 15th of the month.
Okay.
But this time,
yeah,
you need to switch it to the 20th.
Okay.
Maybe your paycheck's coming a little later than usual.
Right.
That change.
Yeah.
even though it seems small,
yeah,
triggers the unusual withdrawal notice.
So they have to notify me.
Yes.
Even if I'm the one who's saying, hey, I need to pay a couple days later.
It's all about keeping the borrower informed.
Wow. So it's any change at all.
Any change.
They got to tell you.
The amount, the date, even the method of payment.
Right.
It's all about transparency.
I see. So it's just like every step of the way, they've got to.
Every step of the way.
Keep you informed.
Keep them in the loop.
Okay. Now, what happens if those two payment attempts have already failed?
Right.
That's where the consumer rights notice comes in, right?
This notice is crucial.
Okay.
Because it reminds you, the borrower, that the lender can't just keep trying to take money from your account.
Right.
They need your permission to try again.
Okay. It's like a legal shield for your bank account.
Exactly.
Knowing about these notices could save someone a lot of stress and potential overdraft fees.
Absolutely.
But it still doesn't magically like solve the issue of having to repay the loan.
Right. You're hitting on a critical point here.
Right.
While these rules protect borrowers,
yeah,
they also present challenges for lenders.
Right. Okay.
So imagine this.
Okay.
You're a lender.
Okay.
And you've hit that two attempt limit. The borrower wants to make good on the loan.
Okay.
But those standard payment methods are out the window.
Right. Because they've already tried twice and they can't do it again.
Exactly. That's where the single immediate payment transfer, or SIPT, comes into play.
Oh, yeah. SIPT. That sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah.
Remind me what that is again.
Think of it as a one-time payment.
Okay.
Either electronic or by check.
Okay.
That bypasses those payment limitations we just discussed.
So even after they've already tried twice.
Yes.
They can request one of these SIPTs.
Not quite a request.
Oh, okay.
The key here is that the SIPT is initiated by the borrower.
Oh, so I, as the borrower, can say,
exactly.
Hey, I want to make this payment.
You are taking the initiative to make this payment.
Even though they can't automatically take it out of my account.
Exactly. It's a way for you to make a payment, even though the standard withdrawal process is on hold.
Gotcha.
Because of those two failed attempts.
So it's like hitting the reset button then.
Not exactly. Here's the catch. Even a successful SIPT doesn't erase those previous failed attempts.
Hmm.
It's a one-time solution, not a complete reset.
Ah, so the clock is still ticking, so to speak.
Exactly.
That's really important to understand. This SIPT loophole isn't a free pass for lenders to just keep trying to collect indefinitely.
It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card.
It sounds like the CFPB has really tried to think of everything.
They really have.
They've even created model forms for all of these notices, haven't they?
They have, and that's where things get a little murky.
Oh, how so?
As our lender presentation points out.
Okay.
While these model forms are intended to simplify things.
Right, make it easier for everybody.
Right, they don't always reflect the nuances of real-world lending.
What do you mean? Can you give me an example?
Sure. Imagine trying to specify a payment date on a form.
Okay.
When that date hinges on other factors, like when the borrower receives their income.
Right, like my paychecks come in on a weird schedule or something.
Exactly. The model form might not have a clear way to capture that level of detail.
So the model forms, while well-intentioned,
right,
can sometimes be more confusing than helpful.
Exactly. And the lender presentation even highlights concerns about the application of these rules to card payments.
Interesting. So are they treated differently or?
Well, that's the thing.
Okay.
The rules treat payments made by debit cards or prepaid cards the same way as checks or electronic transfers.
And that's a problem.
Well, the presentation argues that it's an inconsistency because card payments don't typically have the same risk of overdraft fees as those other payment methods.
Interesting. So they're saying it's not really apples to apples?
It's not a perfect comparison.
Okay.
Some lenders might see this as a loophole.
Oh.
A way to bypass certain aspects of the rule when it comes to card payments.
But wouldn't that be risky for them if...
It could be if the CFPB decides to clarify its stance on that interpretation.
Oh, so they could come back and say, no, you can't do that.
Exactly. This is a classic example of how new regulations can have those unintended consequences.
Right. Or lead to differing interpretations.
So it's really important to stay on top of this stuff because it sounds like it could change.
It's constantly evolving.
Yeah. So we've gone through like all the little details of this payday lending rule.
We've really dug deep.
But for someone like me, does a regular person trying to borrow some money, what does it all actually mean?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
This whole conversation just highlights how important it is to really read the fine print on any loan agreement you're signing.
Yeah, don't just like check the box and sign at the bottom.
Understand what you're agreeing to, especially when it comes to those payment authorizations.
So knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
Knowing your rights as a borrower when a lender can and cannot touch your account. That's huge.
It puts you in control.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so beyond just reading everything really carefully, any other big takeaways from this deep dive?
You know, the lender presentation brought up a really interesting point about the potential downsides of regulations like this.
Oh, really? Yeah, they were arguing that stricter rules could actually push some borrowers toward riskier, unregulated lending options.
Oh, wow. So it's like they're trying to,
exactly.
to crack down on one thing, but it's just going to pop up somewhere else.
It's like squeezing a balloon.
Right.
You reduce pressure in one spot, it just pops up somewhere else.
And those other options might not even be.
They might be worse.
Yeah.
The presentation even called these alternative options the Wild West of finance.
Wild West? That sounds a little scary.
It could be, think loan sharks.
Yeah.
Predatory lenders.
Oh, no.
Situations where you have little to no legal protection.
Wow.
So if those traditional lenders tighten up their practices, some borrowers might feel like they have no choice but to explore these riskier avenues.
That's a really tough situation to be in.
It is. It's a really complex issue with no easy answers.
Definitely makes you think about the role of regulation and how tricky that can be.
It does. The CFPB and other regulators have a really tough job.
Yeah.
Trying to protect consumers without bringing lending to a standstill.
Right. Got to find that balance.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance.
Well, this has been a really eye-opening look at this payday lending rule.
It has.
We've covered so much, from those balloon payments to SIPTs to these unintended consequences and everything in between.
It's a complicated rule.
It is complicated, but hopefully our listeners are walking away feeling a little bit more informed and ready to navigate the world of short-term lending.
That's what we hope for.
Remember, everyone, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to your money.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive of the payday lending rule. We'll see you next time.